97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
Oh my God, that was so much fun last night. I can not even describe how much fun I had watching that.
You know, for a Cardinal fan, that's as close to a World Series win as we've had in a while.
Yes.
Look, I said, because, and I'll play some audio here, you know, we had Scott Jennings on the show yesterday. He was there with his son. They were in the right field bleachers having a blast with all those, you know, Phillies fans. And I said afterwards, maybe this is a little bit of a over-dramatization, but I think that was like the game six of home run derbies last night. Yeah. It really was. It was so exciting. Sue, did you watch it?
No, I saw it all this morning.
Okay. I mean, look, I'll tell you what, and Ethan, you can relate with this. I specifically told Ethan I didn't want to talk about it at all until we hit the air this afternoon, because I'll play the audio of your video, but I swear, I've told you this before, like when I am into a sporting event and I'm nervous, right? And I'll do this for any sporting event. I talked about it when we talked about the the Olympics and everything that happened with the World Baseball Classic and all these things as well. So I'm pacing behind my couch in the basement. Becky and Alexa. Alexa kind of got into it too. She wasn't at first, but then she sort of noticed what was happening in the last round. And it was so funny to watch Schwarber's face, because I thought he looked overly concerned way too early. But I guess he felt the heat coming. And for those people that didn't see it, this is another one of those things where I don't know where people get their, you know, excitement in life when it comes to moments like this, because this is almost indescribable. And Ethan, you could relate with that based on what I saw from your video and what you did in your living room last night, which was basically a younger man's version of what I was doing. I was yelling in the house last night. Becky was too. That was so damn exciting. It was unreal.
My caption on, I tweeted out of my buddy recorded me and one of my best friends losing our minds to it. And my caption was, "Sports bring out the kid in you."
Yeah,
and that
does.
Is exactly what happened to me last night.
Okay, so let me play a couple here. Here's Netflix.
A homer wins it, a non-homer, and we're going to a swing-off.
Baseball is not afraid.
Wow. Is that
enough? You can hear it.
Is that enough? Jordan Walker wins it!
Unreal. All right, so let me get to the right field bleachers call, because Jennings, and it was so funny, if you watch the video, there's nobody around him that's cheering. It's all Philadelphia fans that are so stunned. So it's Scott and his son out there.
Yeah, baby, let's go, J-Walk. Here we go. One swing for the whole thing. It's a long play ball.
That's Jennings there.
Jordan Walker.
Oh my God.
And you can hear his son going crazy, but nobody around them. Nobody around them.
Gosh, that's awesome.
So there, here's Ethan, and this is your house or is it a friend's house?
It's at a friend's house.
Okay, here we go.
Get home.
So you gotta wait. This is the tying home run.
One more. No, sit down. Sit down. You gotta sit down.
Okay. Can't change anything we're doing.
Right, yeah, I get it. Well, I was doing the same thing. I'm like, okay, dude, just tie it, right? Just tie it. And then after he ties it, I'm like, well, let's just win it, right? Let's just win it right here. That was just a thrill. And it could not have happened to a better young man.
Yes,
I mean, what
agreed.
Happened? I will say this, and we're going to place it. What happened in the aftermath of his win? It just gives me chills, because his grandma was there, his
yes.
mom and dad, and it was just amazing. Fred.
So let me tell you what happened to me last night. So I invited a couple of my sisters over and some friends to watch it, because I had Netflix. A lot of people don't.
Right.
So, you know, I was all ready, but then no one showed up. I mean, they called and said they couldn't make
really?
It, that sort of thing. So, okay, so 7 o'clock, I go into the family room, turn on the TV. I can't get Netflix.
Oh.
Because they said, I don't know, I had to sign up and join. But I had been watching Netflix on that TV.
Right.
So I couldn't figure out why I couldn't get Netflix.
Where is Marie when all this is happening? Yeah.
She is out riding her bike.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Oh, no. Okay.
So I had to wait till she got home and grab her laptop. And so I watched the entire thing on a laptop on my lap, sitting on the sofa with Luna, the dog, sleeping next to me, who I woke up when I screamed.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
You know, at the end. And, you know, luckily, but I didn't join it until the second round because it took me that long to get.
Oh, did you ever figure out why you couldn't watch Netflix?
No, okay. I guess it'll still be a problem.
Well, because what I told a couple of people who didn't see it is you can go on and just fast forward to the last round and watch it. First of all, it started in an impressive way with Wilson Contreras. I thought that he did a great job and he got into a groove at first. You know, it wasn't looking great. He gets into a groove and it's, you know, Contreras and Jordan Walker who make the finals. Bryce Harper doesn't even make the finals, but they're in front of a Philadelphia crowd. Harper won the thing in 2018. I think the last time it was in Philadelphia. Schwarber's a beast. We know that, right?
Yes.
He's unbelievable. But, you know, who else is a beast? Jordan Walker. And he was just, and you know, people don't know him, right? You know, the fans don't necessarily
Not to the level.
Know him, right? To the level of a lot of these guys. So here's Jordan on a couple of things. Well, let me play his family because this is really pretty cool in the aftermath.
It means everything. I mean, as much as they sacrifice for me, honestly, I mean, a lot of sleepless nights for them. I mean, I got two other siblings, and they both had things to do. My brother's in film and art, and my sister did volleyball. So it wasn't easy for them. But they figured out a way to get me to, you know, all my lessons, all my games. And I wouldn't be here without them. And I
that's
absolutely,
a good thing. Yeah.
Grandma's
I like
here
that what you said.
Right. Grandma's
you made,
here, too.
You made a valid point.
And Sister Maya. Yes.
You made a great valid point of when they sacrificed
right,
for you, right?
Right, absolutely.
Mom and Dad.
Yes.
$1 million.
This is Barry Bonds.
Your sacrifice.
Probably a new car.
What you gonna get?
I didn't even thought about that.
He wants a car. We know.
Well, yeah.
You gotta get a car.
I mean, yeah. I got what I want. He on the biggest stage showed that he handles the press and excels. What I mean, that just makes me proud.
Oh my God! So that's another amazing thing because he's at the minimum,
dang,
right? So he's making $800,000. He actually makes more last night than he makes for his salary. I believe that a contract extension
yes,
should be being worked out. There should be some paperwork being drawn up right now. If I had my way, so here's Jordan Walker and Grandma here.
I want to go. I want to ask a question to Grandma.
That's Albert too.
How are you feeling out there?
Oh my God! Just I can't express it, but he knows. I've watched him since he was illegal playing baseball. He was too young to play. And I've been following him since he started, when they couldn't find cleats small enough for him. And he was truly engrossed. And I do believe this is his life calling.
It
I
is.
Believe
him.
Well,
awesome.
You guys did a great job with this young man, and congratulations
thank
to
you. So
you.
Much. It means the world.
You are an incredible
I
home run
it.
Hitter.
Yes, sir. Thank
an
you.
An incredible man and an incredible player.
Yes, sir.
And now
yes,
you
sir.
Got my attention. I'm going to watch a lot
I
of you.
I appreciate it.
That is coming from Barry Bonds,
wow,
the greatest home run hitter of all time. He also said last night that he thought that was one of the greatest home run derby performances of all time.
That's because it was.
That is high praise, and it makes it so much sweeter when you look at what the past 2 years have been like for Jordan Walker, a guy that prior to his major league career probably did not experience a lot of failure in the sense of he is an athletic freak. He is 6'6", 250 pounds. He drives the ball freaking 450 feet. He's a specimen. And for him to have the struggles that he did to hit the lows that he has, batted .210. But in 2024 and 2025 combined, to have to get sent down to the minor leagues multiple times.
It's an amazing
a lot
story.
Of the fan base
amazing,
saying,
yeah,
listen, we're ready to move on from Jordan
yeah,
Walker.
They were.
This is an exclamation point as to his arrival to the national spotlight. I mean, you're hearing all these people recognize him. And you mentioned the contract extension. It's going to happen, and it's going to be massive.
It's a monster.
It's going
yeah,
to
be a monster.
Clear
it
what J.J. Weatherholt is making. So what a special night for him. So cool to see it, and for him to be so composed in such a huge moment with 50,000 people
it
booing
was awesome.
Him.
It that, was awesome.
That's
really
the
was.
Stuff of special talent.
Let me play his dad, too, because I loved
love
his dad.
This.
First of all, this is dad. Like he's all distorted because... He's screaming. And I will say this, if you watch, you know, dad and mom and sister and grandma, they're all surrounded by Phillies fans, but I saw, to their credit, a couple of those fans that were right near them giving them props after Jordan wins. And here's his dad.
Dad, Derek, get over here. Yeah. Get over here. Oh, how about your boy?
Oh, he was awesome today. I just loved everything about it. Just his attitude, his approach, the smoothness of his swing. Looked like his dad. But, yeah, he just did a great job. We're so proud of him. We're proud.
You told me at 6 years old he hit a home run and hit his grandma's car. When did you know he could be this?
Oh, man. So that was an indication there. Education. I think, again, from early age, he always loved the game. He always loved to play baseball. He loved to sleep with his glove. He always had a bat. We traveled with it all the time. He, you know, ate, slept, thought baseball. And he just kept progressing. He just kept getting better and better and working on his craft. And, again, we can't be more proud.
You said you were so nervous, Jordan, coming in. You fooling me? You didn't look it.
No, absolutely was nervous, man.
Hold on 1 second.
This is Ryan Howard.
Oh, yeah, Ryan Howard comes over.
Puts the home run chain on him.
Yeah.
The St. Louisan.
I can't believe that Albert or Matt Holliday didn't ever win that thing, but he's the first Cardinal. It was just magical. And, you know, look, I know a lot of you listening out there, you're political animals and junkies just like me, and we talk about serious issues, but I need distractions. Fred, you know how we love our Cardinals. Ethan the same way. And that was, and I watched the whole damn thing last night. Now, I'll have my criticisms as the afternoon goes on because the broadcast crew is awful. Vasgersian was okay, but I like GLP-1, CC Sabathia, the way he looks, but he was boring as hell. Albert was okay. Barry Bonds actually was terrible on that set, I thought. I don't know. And then whoever the other woman was, she was terrible too.
The production was not good.
No.
I'm sure we'll talk about that.
There were some issues with that, but overall, thank goodness, Jordan Walker gets the win, and that was a blast. President Trump earlier today talking about a variety of topics, including the Middle East.
The Middle East, believe it or not, is coming together. We're getting rid of the bully of the Middle East. Iran was the bully of the Middle East. They bullied Iraq. They bullied every country. There was fear all over the Middle East with other countries. I understand that, but there was fear. But there's no fear anymore because their military capability has been knocked to hell, and there's no fear. I think the Middle East is coming together like it's never come together before.
All right, we have Leland Vitter back with us from News Nation this afternoon, a St. Louis native. A lot of questions about what's going on in Washington. How are you this afternoon, Leland? Good to speak with you again.
Doing great, Mark.
So, you know, we have a ceasefire that's been broken several times, and, you know, the comments from the president today seemingly were more positive about what's happening in Iran, but what's the reality? What is your sense of where the reality is with the ceasefire and the conflict with Iran currently?
Well, it certainly seems as though the ceasefire is over. What is confusing to me continually is why this president keeps playing by effectively the rules that the Iranians have created and therefore benefits them. And by that I mean there's a number of people who are running Iran right now who President Trump says has lied to them, they're bums, they're scum, whatever else. Yet they're still alive. And every day we get a statement from Central Command saying we have hit targets along the Iranian coast to degrade the Iranians' ability to fire on ships in the Strait of Hormuz. If President Trump wants this to end, he needs to start degrading the life expectancy of Iranian leaders and eventually get to leaders who either are completely unable to lead and therefore the Iranians stop, or more likely, you get to leaders who would like to live and therefore they make a deal.
He seems, though, it just seems like we've been talking about the same parameters for a while here, and I don't know how many layers you kind of have to dig into to try to get, you know, to the people who are supposedly going to cut the right deal. But it's almost like the administration is operating under the assumption that the war is over. You know, we're just kind of doing these things around the edges. Meantime, oil keeps going back and forth, and the Iranians, you know, keep pushing buttons that I don't anticipate they're going to stop pushing, right? Why would they?
Well, why would they is right, because they have not been made to pay a price they're unwilling to pay. And that continues to be the problem. I think you and I have talked about this. I've certainly written about this in War Notes and said it on the show. President Trump has a choice. He can either pay now or pay later. And this idea of a low-grade conflict where he says, well, the war's over, we've won, but we're still bombing them, it doesn't make sense to anybody.
No.
It is the worst of both worlds for him. Understandably, now with Lindsey Graham gone, the isolationist wing of the Republican Party is a lot louder and more powerful. There is no sort of intellectual bulwark to that. But I would sort of zero in here that until Trump is willing to be far more aggressive with the Iranians, that it forces them to change their calculus, this is going to keep going on, and therefore the problems that he's dealing with are going to keep going on.
So let me ask about tomorrow night. Here's what he said. There's a speech tomorrow night. We found out about this yesterday.
We'll concern that subject, and we'll have a couple of other things to say also. But I'd rather save it, but it's really big news. It's really, really big news. And our country has to shape up. But that's what we're going to be talking about Thursday is it doesn't get bigger, because without free and fair elections, you don't have a country. We'll be discussing other things, too. But it's going to be a very big announcement. Yeah?
All right. Well, those are high expectations that he's setting right there. I mean, obviously, there seems to be an indication that there is an attempt to kind of go back to 2020 and expose election fraud. What do you think is going to happen tomorrow night? What do you know about this at this point, Leland?
Well, the president has certainly built this up for Thursday night, that there's going to be some kind of major announcement. Our reporting is that it is going to be about a attempt by foreign governments to influence the 2020 election. And so even taking it face value, I'm not sure what that gets us. We've always known that foreign governments have wanted to influence our elections. I, from a political standpoint, I don't understand the president's desire to relitigate 2020.
I don't
it's
either.
A personal issue.
Yeah.
It's personal. It's not political. Except for this. Donald Trump wants the SAVE Act passed, which is the voter ID mandatory citizenship voting law. That's not going to happen. It's just not. I know many on the right want it to. They hope it will. They say, why won't it? But it's not going to. So look at this from Donald Trump's perspective. He thinks he's going to get beat in the midterms. That's what the polling really shows. That's fine. That's what happens in off-year elections. To me, it's most likely that he's setting this up so he can say, look, I told you the SAVE Act is something we needed. I told you, you Republicans, you needed to do something. So if he loses the midterms, he can turn around and blame Republicans. And Alyssa Slotkin is the one senator from Michigan, Democrat, who just said Democrats will never win another election if the SAVE Act is passed, which she's probably right about.
Yeah, I think I even have that audio that I can play a little bit later. Look, yesterday was the anniversary of Butler, right? And in War Notes yesterday, you talked about how, you know, the party rallied around him. I think a lot of us at that point said, oh, this election is over. But you pointed out that he won when he talked about things that people cared about, the economy, no boys and girls sports, no electric car mandates, restoring America's military. These were all things that people got behind. But you also pointed out, Leland, that the person who might have understood that better than anyone is Lindsey Graham, who shockingly passed away over the weekend. His sister was sworn in, as you know, this afternoon. That's just an amazing story. I don't think I knew all the details about, you know, Lindsey Graham raising his sister, which is stunning. But any thoughts on his passing? I don't know. You probably knew him.
I did. Thought very highly of him. The thing about Lindsey Graham that to me is the most telling is how principled he was in his beliefs. And a lot of people, even in his death, have been criticizing him, dogging him, whatever you want to call it, that he was way too flexible, that he sort of just went whichever way the winds went. It's a little different. Lindsey Graham had permanent priorities, which was the nobility of America and the use of American power around the world to stop evil before it got to America's shores. He felt, understandably, considering how he grew up, that when evil is allowed to operate and go unchecked, eventually it comes to hurt America. He thought it was better to deal with it away from America's shores than at America's shores. And he was principled about that. And he would sort of do whatever he had to do. He would befriend whoever he had to befriend, work with whoever he had to work with, including Democrats, if he felt it furthered those principles and those ideals.
Yeah, he, you know, it was interesting because obviously his relationship with President Trump, and this is true of many people, including the vice president, you know, kind of wavered back and forth. The president actually had some very kind words to say about Senator Graham. Now, of course, as you know, when anything happens along these lines, you have conspiracy theorists. Apparently, the FBI showed up. I don't know if that's just kind of standard protocol. A member of the U.S. Senate died, so maybe you'd want to check that, you know, off. But between Mitch McConnell and the picture from the hospital, Lindsey Graham, the conspiracy theorists are having a great week.
They always will. At some level, I think that the embrace of conspiracy theories in America now, whether it's the UFO thing or Epstein or whatever it is, people are so sickened by American politics right now, and rightfully so, that they are looking for other answers and other explanations, and the conspiracy theories give them one. It gives them things to talk about other than actually the issues at hand that are really awful.
On Balance with Leland Vitter airs 8 p.m. Central on News Nation. What do you got set for the show tonight?
Talking about these issues, the isolationist wing of the Republican Party coming in. Also, big news today, inflation way down.
Yeah.
One of the biggest drops we've ever seen. And yet, the Iran war is restarting. Problem number one. Problem number two for the administration. The recent two killings by ICE of people, and they are unquestionably changing tack, right? You know, in January, Team Trump doubled down on everything when it came to immigration and ICE enforcement. That is not how they're handling things now. They've stopped ICE from doing any kind of car stops, trying to, you know, arrest people in cars, which all of these are big changes.
Yeah, that's interesting. I did not know that. Is that coming from Homan then?
I believe it would be coming from the secretary, from Mark Wayne Mullen.
Oh, that makes even more sense. See, that's why you're on TV and I'm just sitting here on the radio. Leland Vitter, always great to have you on News Nation tonight, 8 p.m. on Balance. Check it out. We'll see you. Thank you so much. Got a bunch of audio that I want to share here, and we'll pop around on some other topics here in this segment. Don't forget, we have Sue's News coming up on a Tuesday in the next hour. Also, after that, we got a couple things going for the 4 o'clock hour this afternoon, including Catherine Hanaway, the AG of Missouri. She's going to make the case for Amendment 5. We're going to talk about a couple other things there as well. Scotty Warman's going to kind of recapture the magic of Jordan Walker's home run derby last night. He'll join us at 4:48. We have, you know, a pretty good race going on for St. Charles County Executive. Steve Ellman is the incumbent. Steve was not going to run again. He decided to get back into the race. Bill Eigel, former state senator who ran for governor, is in that race with Jason Law, who's the former mayor for the city of St. Louis, and he is a police officer. So Jason, actually, I met him earlier. Never met him. He was in because I think he was over on the other side of the building. He's going to come in at 5 o'clock, and we'll have a conversation about that race. And we'll do that here. We have St. Louis County executive race, but honestly, for Republicans, there's only one choice. It's Dennis Hancock. I could probably make a case for Republicans grabbing a Democrat ballot in this primary, but in St. Charles County, this is the primary, so you're going to basically be deciding the winner in that election.
They've got an article about Dennis Hancock in the Post-Dispatch today.
Yeah, it's like the lone... Who is the lone Republican running for that particular seat? And look, I like Dennis. I've known him for a long time. He used to be the mayor of Fenton. And I give him credit for getting into the race, but I've been too close, and I think it's just folly to think that a Republican is going to win, you know, countywide. Bill Corrigan came close. Rick Stream came close. If Rick Stream and Bill Corrigan couldn't do it, especially that's when the Democrats were not bat blank crazy, right? Mm. I mean, there was some sense of normalcy. And that didn't happen. Well, now let me give you another example of the craziness. I just don't see how, Dennis is going to beat a Democrat. Having said that, I think what we learned years ago is when, you know, no one was on the ballot for the Republicans to become county prosecutor. That's how Wesley Bell stepped into
that. That's right.
So, you know, you want someone on the ballot. Now, who's going to win on the other side? I think that's going to be interesting. Look, we had conversations about this on the roundtable, the conventional wisdom a couple of months ago. Democrats would tell you that Senator Brian Williams has this thing wrapped up, right? He's raising money. He's handshaking. He's going out. He's meeting and greeting. He's got the energy. He's focused on the county. I met with him. I sat down with him, probably had lunch sometime in April to talk about, you know, the county. He impressed me. He seemed to be micro-focused on the issues of the county. Again, instead of, you know, being interested in making political statements in that office, let's focus on, you know, fixing things that are wrong in the county. But, you know, Jake Zimmerman, who's the county assessor, gets into the race. He's got a fair amount of cash. He's running ads. His whole thing is, hey, I might be goofy looking and a ginger, but I'm going to be okay when it comes to running county government. But he's got to have a shot just because, you know, he's raising money. Now, I don't know. The other conventional wisdom would be, wait, are you going to vote for the guy who raises your taxes on your house? I don't know, but that's kind of interesting, the dynamics there. Now, what we don't have in that race, unfortunately, is a Democrat socialist, but we have plenty of those in the city of St. Louis. So here's the letter. You want to hear this? This was interesting. Fred sent this to me from Megan Green, the Democrat socialist communist that is, this is just shocking to me, the president of the Board of Aldermen in the city of St. Louis. So she says, I became a Democrat when I was in, this was personalized, by
Why
the way,
do
to
I
Fred.
Care?
Well, this was actually a fundraising letter, but somehow Fred is on her list because it says Fred. I became a Democrat when I was in middle school because I believed it was the party of working people. I believe it stood for workers' rights, a strong societal safety net, women's rights, and the idea that everyone deserves dignity and opportunity. I also believed in the promise of the Democratic Party as a big tent because it promised to welcome people of every race, class, religion, sexual orientation, gender identity, blah, 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 blah. But then she kind of rips into the Democrat Party. I came to realize that it was not the party I imagined as a kid. In its pursuit of moderation and, quote, meeting in the middle. Too often, Sue, the party embraced corporate and pro-military politics that left working people behind and pushed too many out of the tent if their inclusion is not seen as politically expedient. So she goes on here and she's like, trans people, our immigrant community, rural residents, non-college educated workers, and she targets CEOs and billionaires. It's the same crap, but she's doing fundraising here for the Democrat Socialists. So she's owning that title, and, you know, so is Cori Bush. Cori Bush is certainly endorsed by the Democrat Socialists. Here's what Megan Green says about Cori Bush. We need a fire in Congress. We still don't have the federal disaster relief funds we have. Cori would be sleeping on the White House steps to bring attention to this. And she wouldn't be doing any good whatsoever. Let's say she would sleep on the White House. You're not going to have more power, you know, to get to FEMA outside of Senator Hawley, Senator Schmidt, and current members of Congress. Nobody wants to deal with Cori Bush because she's a troublemaker and she's an idiot and she's not interested in solving problems.
Well, that's
she's
true.
Interested in playing the race card. She's interested in playing the, you know, the not the gender card. I'm thinking of the class warfare card. Oh. They do that all the time. That's something Megan Green is doing
as
well.
It's not productive.
No, it doesn't solve anything. All right. So a little audio here as there was a real busy day the last couple of days for the president. We've talked about with Leland Vittard the speech he's going to give tomorrow night. I'm a little concerned about that speech, Sue, because if this really is just going to be a re-litigation of 2020, I don't know how that moves the country forward. Now, maybe there's some big gotcha moment that's going to be exposed. I don't know. I think what the president needs to do is he needs to make a very impassioned case for what's happening in Iran and talk about the economy, especially coming off some inflation numbers today that were really, really good, especially if you take gas prices out of the mix. Unfortunately, you can't take gas prices out of the mix, and they're still going back and forth because of the price of oil. So the president today was with the prime minister of Iraq, the new prime minister of Iraq.
Prime minister of Iraq has been amazing. He won an election that a lot of people didn't anticipate could be won by anybody else. Other than another person who was not, in my opinion, a good person, not good for America, I don't think good for Iraq. And I played a role in, I mean, it was very important to me to have somebody get in there that can do the job and do it well. And we have a fantastic champion, a new champion. And he won the election very soundly, very conclusively, and he wasn't favored But by the time they got to know him, he ended up winning. And he's going to be there for a long time.
All right. So it's a little weird that we're like all, you know, cozy with The Rock now. Even joked about his looks.
And he's a young man. He's young and he's handsome, which I don't like. I'm not happy about it.
That's the Trumpest thing to
say. Yeah, it really is. It's so Trump. All right. So he did talk about some things. I want to kind of share a little bit more of this because there was a question that came up about the, you know, the Strait of Hormuz and what's going on right now, and is anyone charging fees, and will there be fees?
I was called by different people, different countries, kings and emirs and all of the people that we all know and we all love, and they've been very strong partners, and they said we'd love to do it a different way. We'd love to invest in the United States with billions and billions of dollars and continue our record setting, because there's never been a time like this with the United States, with the factories, with the plants, with everything else. And we would like to invest tremendously in the United States as opposed to charging a fee. And I like that, actually, because I don't think anybody should be able to charge a fee for the Strait or for any other Strait relationship in terms of other sections of the world. I don't think anybody should be really in that position.
Yeah, I think that people would agree on that. And he talked a little bit about, like, what would that investment look like?
We have Saudi Arabia, UAE, Qatar, Bahrain, and Kuwait, primarily, and then others. I spoke to all of them, and they would love to invest more money in the United States at record amounts, and that would be very acceptable. And this way, there's no fee. I don't like the concept of a fee. But at the same time, it's not fair that we're protecting this strait for the entire world, for China and everyone. I don't mind protecting it for China. I don't mind protecting it for anybody. But it's unfair that we're not in somehow compensated.
And one more topic I'm going to touch on. I asked this of Leland Vittert a few minutes ago. I don't know if you heard this, but the FBI apparently did go to Lindsey Graham's house to investigate. I don't know that I have trouble with that because it's a member of the United States Senate.
Standard procedure,
right? I'm not saying it was unusual circumstances, but I mean, he did die very suddenly, so I don't think it's bad for a trip over there just to make sure that things are buttoned up. But the president was asked about that today.
I don't know why, because I think, you know, he had a problem. His father had a very similar problem, as you know. It's very unique. At first, I heard it was clogged arteries, because he did have clogged arteries. He had a problem with that. He was... I wish he took better care of himself. I say, you can solve that problem. But what happened is actually something that's very hard to detect. It was not related to any blockage. It was a totally different thing.
Yeah, unfortunately, one of the narratives that's kind of emerged in the aftermath of Senator Graham's death is a lot of the people who loved and knew him well said, look, he worked very hard. He did not take good care of himself. And I don't know if this could have made any difference because, as the president indicated, this was, you know, genetic and ran in the family as well. He said a little bit more about Lindsey Graham, though.
And this is something that is very almost undetectable. And if it happens, there's not much you can do about it. Sounds unfortunate, but there's not much you can do about it. If you look at his father died of the same thing at about the same age. So there was not much. They say it's almost undetectable. You can detect it by if you have a very bad back. That's a sign. It's a bad sign. So if anybody has a bad back, it's a pretty rough thing to think about. But the fact that's one of the primary signs. And he would tell me he had a bad back. But little did anyone realize it was for that. So
yeah, you know, sometimes you got to listen to your body. And I mentioned this. This is a little bit more of a personal thing. But I have the brother of my brother-in-law, so my sister's husband's brother. And Sue, I shared this story, I think, with you a couple of weeks ago. About a month ago, he has some back issues on a Sunday. He had played golf. He's like, it was kind of aggravating him. He had had an appointment that was set up for just like a regular physical on the Wednesday of that week. And he was going to bring it up. So he goes in for the checkup, and they determine that he has liver cancer. He had surgery, I believe it was a week ago yesterday. He is still in the ICU. The cancer had spread quite a bit. I mean, my sister's been sending out some of the family, you know, wrap-ups of his condition just to make sure everyone knows where he is. And it is rough going. And, you know, I guess I bring it up because Lindsey Graham's another good example. You just don't know what's going to happen. I mean, this family, and this is a guy, by the way, who retired early, cashed out of a company for millions of dollars, has everything, you know, in front of him, beautiful home in Florida, home in the Chicago area. And he might not make this. I mean, he is legit in a situation where, you know, his body is trying to fight off these things. They're worried about infection. And the surgery was a lot more complicated than they thought it was going to be. And, man, that just, you know, it hits you hard when you think about younger people in particular. But even with Lindsey Graham, it comes out of nowhere, right? Completely. And then since we're on the death topic, I told Fred and Sue, I was devastated this morning because my son called me, and that's never a good sign when your child calls you. Usually I'm the one calling him, and I knew something was wrong. Well, he, like his dad and my family, he loves cats and dogs and animals, yeah. And he lost one of his cats this morning found her dead. And I, you know, Sue, I told you, I've never had that happen. I've always, with animals, had to either, you know, euthanize them at home or at the vet. I've never run into a situation where one of my animals had passed away and I found it, and that's, I just felt so bad for him. Yeah. So, hey, there was a real positive awful segment. Sorry yeah about that. It was an interesting hearing today on Capitol Hill. You don't have this very often, but members of the Supreme Court, like Amy Coney Barrett and Lena Kagan and John Roberts and others, testified before Congress on the safety issues. They're actually asking for more money to be allocated for the safety of the justices because they're getting so many threats. And I think this is like a bipartisan thing. The whole thing is just disgusting, right? Here's Amy Coney Barrett.
They have required me to, my children, to think about and see things that children should not have to see or think about. One example is when threats to my life were particularly intense a few years ago around the time of the Dobbs leak. My security detail sent me home with a bulletproof vest, and I carried it into my house, put it into my bedroom, dropped it down on a table, turned around, and my 12-year-old son was standing in the doorway of my bedroom, and he wanted to know what it was and why I had it, and I didn't know how to respond because maybe I lack imagination, but I didn't expect that performing this service was going to put me in the position of explaining to my children what a bulletproof vest was and why I had to wear one.
You know, sometimes I think we forget that people who are thrust into these big, big positions don't have, you know, yeah, human, regular people problems as well. And that had to be tough. And, you know, it's disgusting. And I don't care where the death threats are going to either the Democrat members, the liberal members of the court, or the conservative members. It is disgusting. It really, you know, things that are happening out there, Sue, in social media, like just to give you an example, I told you the way that I knew that Lindsey Graham had died is because I started seeing people stomping on his grave already on Facebook and Twitter. And the lack of decorum that people have, you know, whether it's Mitch McConnell or even, you know, AOC, I don't care. Like, they feel like they can say anything as revolting as they possibly can on social media with no consequences, which I guess is because most of these people feel like they can do that.
Yeah.
But it's just disgusting. It really is. So I have empathy for all the justices if they have to live their lives that way, unfortunately. All right, we'll come back here. We're going to have Sue's News on a Friday afternoon. The Attorney General, I'm sorry, on a Tuesday, when I'm really fast forwarding there to Friday. On a Tuesday, Catherine Hanaway, the Attorney General, is going to join us as well. We're going to check in with Scotty Warman about the All-Star Game tonight and that big show that Jordan Walker put on last night.
Get more at 971talk.com.